Rosalinda Randall is a civility and etiquette trainer, speaker, and author. She's been spreading workplace civility for over 15 years through her workshops, speaking engagements, television and radio interviews, articles, and most recently her book, Don't Burp in the Boardroom. Rosalinda simplifies how civility and etiquette play a role in the workplace and how easy it is to apply to any situation. This and more next on Revenue Chat. Hi, everyone. This is Tony D'Urso with Revenue Chat. With us, we have Rosalinda Randall, a civility and etiquette trainer, speaker, and author who says, etiquette is an attitude. She's been spreading workplace civility for over 15 years through her workshops, speaking engagements, television and radio interviews, articles, and most recently, her very cool book, Don't Burp in the Boardroom, Your Guide to Handling Uncommonly Common Workplace Dilemmas. With a humorous but yet straightforward manner, Rosalinda simplifies how civility and etiquette play a role in the workplace and how easy it is to apply to any situation, such as revive your workplace atmosphere, enhance your customer's experience, support HR policies, easily assimilate new hires, and strengthen staff relationships, among a few. She's made television appearances across the country and has the dream of being a regular guest on a television show, and I think she's well on her way. Her website is rosalindarandall.com, and that's Randall, R-A-N-D-A-L-L. All right. Rosalinda is going to give us a number of ways to enhance our professional reputation. I'm looking forward to this. Let's bring her on. Hello, Rosalinda. How are you?
Hello, Tony. I'm doing very well. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Oh, pleasure's all mine. I'm so grateful to have you on this show. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Cool. Well, now, Rosalinda, I mentioned a little bit about you, and perhaps you'd like to fill us in a little more on your roots and how you became an expert in this field. So please let us know, how did it all start for you?
Well, when I was born, I'm just kidding, I'm not going to go back that far, but I do get asked this question frequently. No, it wasn't that, it was a lovely childhood, so I have to say that. Right. It was, you know, what people would consider perfect, really. But the way I got into it was really just being raised a certain way, and I do not mean with the, you know, fancy 1,400 forks and finger bowls and cloth napkins every night. Not at all. Very middle-class family, you know, the story of parents came from another country, dad worked two jobs, got his high school diploma, you know, that whole thing that I was raised with. So a lot of work ethic, definitely, and humility. But beyond that, it was really about certain traits, and which are the foundation, really, of my book, and any advice or opinions that I give come from those traits. And one of them is just being respectful. I mean, we all know what pretty much that is. And even respecting another, meaning not necessarily making your point when you disagree with someone, you know. Being courteous. Just we always had to ask politely and say thank you. If we forgot thank you, my dad would say, excuse me, thank you, to remind us. So it was always kind and everything. And being tactful. If we wanted to say something, I was very, you know, conservative, kind of traditional Hispanic home. But the one thing, and I was talking to my mom recently, was that we were always, or I'll speak for myself, always allowed to express myself, no matter what I was thinking. However, it was within these certain guidelines, like you don't yell, you don't have to scream, but definitely tell us what you think, even if they disagreed. So those are some of the traits: courtesy, respect, tact, humility, and definitely some humor, which I think we're lacking. And I like to describe humor kind of, I guess I define it in my own way, is not, you know, going into the boss every day with a knock-knock joke or, hey, did you hear the one about? It's more of the attitude or your outlook on how you bounce back from unpleasant situations, how you handle them. Do you get upset or can you not persevere, but you know, move on from it quickly, So that's really how I got into it. I sort of just fell into it. And then learning all about the finger bowl and the forks just took some, you know, training at a Protocol School of Washington, and then just constant research and maintaining, you know, in my industry, just all the trends that go on. So hopefully that wasn't too long of an explanation.
Oh, that was wonderful. Very interesting. And I can see those roots. I can see that because you were brought up that way and it was instilled in you, I can see how it became a natural course of action, line of action, to just move into this.
Yes.
And I have some questions about this, but first I wanted to thank you. At the beginning of this week, I received this beautiful book in the mail, autographed, and I want to thank you for it. Don't Burp in the Boardroom. And I am, in the time allotted, I went through this, still more to go. And my wife, by the way, is nudging me, telling me, hurry up. She wants to read this. She can't wait to get herself knee-deep in this. She's a voracious book reader. It's so cool. And I wanted to tell the audience some things. There's a few points, and I'm not trying to steal your thunder, but let's just call it a nice elongated introduction.
Okay.
I wanted to share some things with the audience very quickly, and then I'm going to ask you some questions. The author's note, it struck a chord with me, and it says, "Dear reader, books are a dime a dozen, and everybody's got an opinion. So on the off chance that this book is helpful or even simply amuses you, thank you. You've made it worthwhile. The purpose of this book is to inspire more courteous communication and to encourage a more good-natured and gracious outlook and temperament when handling life's dilemmas. How? By allowing courtesy, consideration, tact, respect, humility, and humor to be your guide. Plainly speaking, the person who exemplifies these traits typically does not create dilemmas. They usually help resolve them." I love that. So well written. And then, if I may, just for the audience's sake, give an idea of the range that you go into is so, let's call it diverse. You hit everything. Here's just a list. Here's just some of the table of contents titles. I love this. First impressions, hygiene, telephone, social media, and electronics, all things boss, that's a cool one, meetings, networking, and trade shows, workplace behavior, it starts with me, coworker quirks and dilemmas, that's cool, dining bases and workplace cuisine, mostly male, female focus, pupil to professional, and overview for novices, and uncommonly common dilemmas. You cover such a great range and very insightful communications. I haven't finished with it, but I'm loving it. And now I'm going to give the floor back to you. This is your interview. Let me ask you some questions, please.
Okay, but thank you so much for the lovely introduction and the mention of the book. I'm honored that you read that. Thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you. All right, let's get into some questions here. Rosalinda,
okay.
Workplaces are casual. Does it really matter what you wear to work?
Oh, well, not if you don't want to be noticed for the right reason. You know, being in California, very near the Silicon Valley, if you're familiar with that, you know, the Facebook and Googles and Yahoos, and they tend to be somehow, and, you know, what I read out there, they tend to blame poor Mark Zuckerberg for the hoodie, bringing the hoodie into the workplace. But, you know, that's just his, I guess, stamp or image. However, you know, people do bring up when I've done presentation, they go, well, he wears them, you know, that what does that have to do with my job? And I said, well, he wears them now, but what did he wear when he went on interviews, when he wanted people to help fund his company? Or invest in his company. And when he went to the White House or he went to a function, he was in a suit. So there is a time and a place for things. What I tell people just in a nutshell is, you know, this isn't it, but, you know, we hear all the time, dress for the job that you want, not for the job that you have. And that's fine. And if it's a job that you have and you're content with where you are in a company, I say fine. Not everyone wants to advance. Not everyone wants to, you know, make an impression. You got the job. They saw good in you. Maybe you dressed up for it. I don't know. But if it's serving you to where you're not complaining about, they don't pay me, I got overlooked for a promotion or anything, again, you're content, then wear what you want. But I tell people that maybe consider dressing for the person who makes the decision on whether or not you get the promotion, you get to go to the conference, and who does your review. You know, follow your boss's lead and dress maybe even a notch above or equal to, and you will be noticed. Another reason I tell people that it's important is, what if the person that was going to give the presentation called in sick or got sick at the last minute? Can they look at you and say, come into our clients, into the conference room, and do the presentation? Are you ready for it? So, you know, and if it is a more casual atmosphere, I tell people keep a pair of real shoes, not flip-flops, real shoes in your cubby or in your cabinet, and a sport coat if it's a gentleman, or a plain black jacket if it's a woman, so that you are at least prepared to throw something like that on at the drop of a hat. And for the younger set, when I talk to them, it usually gets them when you get into the social aspect of it. What if your online dating service, you know, you see the ping or you get pinged and it's, I can meet you today for drinks. Are you prepared to meet that blind date for drinks after work if you're dressed in your cargo pants that are hanging off and flip-flops and your old T-shirt that doesn't smell too bad? So those are a myriad of reasons that I believe dressing a little bit above what you'd like to is, I think, for your career goals, it is very helpful.
Those are all great points, and makes sense, very practical, and very good logic behind them. Excellent.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad. Most people want to know why. I mean, that really is the case. I recently had, a client who wanted me to address, and actually it's not the only client, wanted me to address the attire. You know, the people that, some of their clients who were going to go off and meet clients weren't dressing to their standards. And HR is finding it kind of difficult to tell people exactly what to wear, because to one person, a casual Friday means, I keep going back to these cargo shorts or whatever, but shorts or really worn-in jeans, flip-flops or ratty tennis shoes and a T-shirt to what Casual Friday was when it first started was, you know, khakis instead of slacks or a suit. Or even now dark jeans with a tucked-in dress shirt or at least a collar. That's what Casual Friday used to be, but now it's to the, you know, to the extreme, as we tend to do, human nature. So I believe that, you know, for opportunity, that's my biggest reason to promote dressing up a little bit in the workplace, just opportunities.
I like that. It's very smart. When I used to be a manager way back when in the corporate world, I always made a point to dress just a notch above, because you never know also when the CEO is going to be walking through with some very high-level or high-profile clients and he's showing off the company, you definitely don't want to be there looking ratty and being pointed out, especially when the company has a professional image. So, very good points. All right.
Very true.
Yeah. Another question is, saying no. How can you say no without coming across as rude or unhelpful? What's your wisdom on that?
Oh, my. You know, there are a lot of people who get upset if you say no. And, you know, again, because I'm constantly doing research for you know, incoming generation, the millennials, poor guys get such a bad rap. But, you know, the different generations complain about the other generations. And, you know, they're saying they don't know how to handle, especially the younger incoming professionals, don't know how to handle no. They've never been told no. Everything's good. Everyone's a winner. And, you know, that explanation can attribute to it. I'm not sure. I'm not a psychologist or a sociologist to really know the research behind that, but that's what I tend to see quite as an explanation. But it depends on how you say no. If you're going to say no, your coworkers sometimes need a hand, and you're not too busy, and they know that, and you just still say no because you have the attitude of, maybe it's not my job, or I don't feel like it, why should I? Saying no to that without being helpful, that might not help your reputation, you know, and team build, so to speak. But when you really have to say no, and I'll give you an example. Someone asked me in a presentation, you know, it's my boss. They told me to do this and this and this. I don't know if it was a he or a she. I'll just say a he for the conversation's sake. I have my duties, and he kept asking me to do these other things, and some of them were personal. Big, but just personal things. And she said, I don't want to say no to him. How do I do that, especially your boss? One way, and that just came up off the top of my head at the time, but I find it helpful, is make a list of the things that you have and request a few minutes to speak to your boss and say, these are the things that I have. What priority would you like me to place them in? Put it on them. Ask them, what is a priority? And that way, you know, it's helpful to someone. But just saying no in general or in the workplace, if someone wants, I don't know what they would ask you, but you can just say, oh, no, I'm sorry. Some people say, I don't want to apologize. Why should I? You know, it depends on who you are and that sort of thing. But I always think it softens the thing. I just, oh, I'm sorry, but no, I can't. Now, if people ask you for an explanation, I tell people you don't owe an explanation. Sometimes it's nice to give one. If you've been invited, for example, to, you know, your friend's wedding, a no is probably not enough. They'll wonder what's going on, and you might offer an explanation. But in the business world, typically, you don't need to do that, other than it won't fit into my schedule, or I can't today, how about tomorrow? Sometimes a no doesn't mean a no forever. It can mean that if I get done with this, I'll call you or come back in an hour. But just saying no is, you know, I'd like to help you, but I can't. I wish I could, but I can't. Just things, and if someone should be, you know, should become angry, I tell people don't change your no, because then they know you've just set the standard, or you've set for future times. They know that if they bug you enough or they pout, that you'll change your mind. So once you decide to say no, also, you know, stick to it. And also, you don't need to respond right away, unless, of course, it's an emergency. Oh, I need you to make these copies. I'm going into a meeting right now. Can you do it? No, I can't. Okay. And then they can go into and ask someone else to help them. Under those circumstances, obviously, you want to respond to someone right away. But if it's something that can take time, just say, let me think about it, and I'll send you an email, or I'll get back to you in 10 minutes or half an hour. That'll give you some time to sit with it, and do you really want to do it? Can you do it? Are they always asking for favors and you need to, you know, think of an excuse not to do it? So there are different ways to say no and still maintain a, you know, good relationship with someone.
Those are very interesting points. Very interesting. It makes me think, though, if it's a lot of extra work sometimes or something way out of one's realm, because normally, and bosses think this way as well, a person likes to do something extra and likes the privilege, if you want to call it, of being counted on to do something which may be beyond their duty, but it makes them kind of a team player in a way. So how would you kind of draw that line, Rosalinda, on that?
Well, it depends on your work ethic or attitude towards your job. There are some people who say, that's not my job, why should I? And that's it. That's where they draw their line. I'm not going to do it. Or I'm too busy, why should I? But I'm in agreement with you. If there's a way to help out someone and say yes, I'm a promoter of that. Again, you may not be able to do it then, but tell them, I'd love to help you. Can I see you at 4? I'll be free at 4 and help you. Always turning things down, just like, you know, I say company events. Some people go, oh, I don't go to any of those. Well, you're never going to get noticed. You're never going to build an outside relationship. You're never going to be seen by management. That you aren't, like you mentioned, team player. You are not maybe here to stay. You're not participating. And if you don't give any effort and put yourself out just a little bit now and then, why would they consider you for a promotion that might be more demanding? So in answering, you know, your question, when do you say yes? You want to be a team player. You want to be cooperative. I think that on occasion, when your duties allow, that saying yes is great. I always say make yourself invaluable. The more you know, in the old days, I don't know that they do it now, they used to cross-train people within departments. Now everyone is such, you know, just so detail-oriented in their job description that no one can help anyone out. No, they're not here. You know, I've called, would you be able to send me this form? No, the person that does that isn't here. You can't send me the form? No, they're the only ones. And that's something, well, that person just made themselves not, well, they're not as valuable as they can be. So I just think it could be just the today's work mentality that if it's not part of your duty, you just don't need to do it. Well, I'm not sure. I think that's a, to me, it's a personal way of thinking, to be helpful or not. I don't know how else to put it.
Well, you said it perfectly. Beautiful. Absolutely love it. Great advice. Very straightforward. Excellent. Good insight. Thank you.
You're welcome. I do want to mention, I wouldn't say no too often if it's your boss. Just keep that in mind.
I agree. That came through. Thank you. All right. Let's see. People talk about bullying in the workplace. What does that mean, and how do you deal with that, please?
Oh, yes. That word is, in my opinion, so overused. I don't know what... I think bullying is or the definition is all relative. What you may find someone that says something or does something to you as a bully, I may not. I may be overlook it and just go, whatever, that's who they are, or that's their business, and move on. I prefer to do it that way because I just think if you're going to stop, especially in the workplace, and complain or file a complaint with HR, we'd probably be doing, you know, half our day would be spent complaining about other people. But to some people, bullying can be, you know, a domineering, bossy person who forces you to do things and you can't leave, you know, work until you get that done. I don't know if that really exists. Screaming at you, criticizing you in front of people. I don't know that I remember calling bullying. It was just a unprofessional boss who was just a mean guy. I don't know. Someone who's aggressive or offensive, who doesn't talk to you, who ignores you, who takes credit for something you did, who steals your yogurt from the lunchroom. I mean, those are more, I believe, more intense forms of bullying or more obvious. But then some people, you know, I've asked people this question, they feel that just a basic incivility is someone who's somewhat a form of bullying, and that can be gossiping about them, brushing them off if they say good morning, someone who's moody. You don't know if you're going to be able to approach them and ask them a business-related question because, oh, no, they're in a mood, leave them alone today. Excuse me, you work here, you're getting paid to work, and you have a question. But there's a lot of that going on, not apologizing, even lack of please and thank yous. That's been mentioned a few times by staff people that they say, why? My boss never says please or thank you to me, and that gets old. What do I do? Well, short of going, what's the magic word, you know, when he or she asks you to make a copy or something, I don't think that'll go over too well. Since I brought that up, my advice would be to use it frequently when you speak to that person, and hopefully that they'll catch it. And that's all you can do. I mean, if it really bothers you that they never say please and thank you, then maybe sit down and tell them. But I don't know that that's the best career move. So bullying can come in so many forms. Again, it depends on what your tolerance is. You know, some people don't mind off-color jokes. I know in the workplace you can't do that, but even, you know, off work, having drinks or a cup of coffee with some coworkers, or at work, a political joke, or that's funny, good-natured, not creepy or, you know, horribly vulgar. I'm just saying, you know, little quips that there's some truth to it. Some people might run and go report you, whereas other people can just laugh about certain things. So, ethnic jokes, I mean, those are unheard of these days. But, I mean, you know, the mild ones, I don't know if there's such a thing anymore, but, I can't come up with better examples of things like that offend people. Just interrupting. Some people consider that a form of bullying. I consider that just unprofessional and impatient. So they come in all ways. I know someone who works in an office environment who one of the managers just goes around cussing, and I mean the most vulgar words you can think of, all over the place when they get off the phone with the client or when they're just mad. They slam the door. Don't come and talk to me for the next hour. They walk out of the office and just leave for half day. Those things in the old days, old school, which is kind of where I'm from, that was not tolerated ever. And now it is. So people feel that they can do it, apparently, if there's no consequence. I mean, maybe long-term, sometimes companies find a way to do away with their position due to reorganizational or restructuring, but that takes so much time to do it that way. But in the meantime, you know, imagine how a person like that or even the moody person affects their coworkers, their day. So it's an unpleasant place to be.
Absolutely. Good point. And I think that person is not going to be looked at next time promotion comes around or if the office is expanding or anything. And that's stressful. That's very stressful to have someone running around like a wild canyon at times. That does not help the company. That's a tough one to deal with indeed.
Yes, it is. You can go, I guess, and talk to your manager, talk to HR about it. I could see the situation, but, you know, if it is a person of higher rank, you're putting yourself in a position of a tattletelling, and if they get wind of who it was, you know, that's why people stay quiet. They don't want to lose their jobs. So you don't say anything. You just look the other way and put up with it. But, you know, the other thing that I think affects people is, and that's why they dread, so many people are tired going back to work. If you work in an environment like that, you take it home with you. You're exhausted by putting on the professional face and dealing with it and, you know, smiling at the person who just cussed everybody out because that's what you need to do to keep your job. You go home, and most of us share it with whomever we're living with, if you live with someone. And there it is, that night. It's, again, you're reliving it and telling someone about it. You might feel a little better after you talk about it, but you just took your time away from work to discuss the awfulness from work from that day, and then you go to bed and you start all over again. So I think that is more damaging to a person and our health, our well-being, our mental state, our happiness when you carry it home, as most of us do, at least for a while. I'm not good at shutting things off. So
true. Yes. Mm-hmm. Many of us come home, vent, as it's called, vent to our partner, spouse, and so forth. Okay. I am a believer that with the right tact, one should go to HR or the manager and say, even in the most mild, hey, is this situation being addressed?
Yeah.
All right, well, let's try a different form of office irritation. Someone to me using a nickname, should I correct them? How should I deal with that?
Oh, well, that's up to you. For example, I don't know, you know, your name. I'm just using it as I'll use mine for example. My name is Rosalinda. It's all one name. I don't have a middle name. My parents thought that name was long enough, so they didn't give me a middle name. And apparently it seems too long for some people. And they say, well, can I call you? Sometimes they'll just ask me, well, do you have anything to go shorter? And I said, nothing that I like. You know, that's my standard answer. A little snippy, but it's true. I don't like Rosa. I don't like Rosie. I don't like Linda. So it's Rosalinda. And it took me 20 years to like that name. So now I like it. But if someone, I have an example that I use is I had an appliance repair man come to my home. And I don't expect that appliance to break down again, ever. But he came in and I told him, I said, hello, my name is Rosalinda. And he goes, oh, okay, Rosa. And he called me, you know, a handful of times, Rosa. He needed to get my attention or sign the papers or whatever. I chose not to correct him. I thought, I'm never going to see him again. I know that he was coming from a good place. He wasn't trying to put me down or say he hated that name or his ex-wife's name was Rosalinda. He couldn't call me that. I mean, nothing weird about it. He was just being nice. And I think my opinion is sometimes when people automatically do that, it's a way of them feeling more connected right away with you, like breaking down kind of an icebreaker. We're beyond this, the formality, to be more friendly. And I think that's why most people do that. And I was going to use your name. If your name was, you know, Anthony, and I go and you said, hi, I'm Anthony, I would not go, oh, hey, Tony. Okay, you didn't tell me to call you Tony. So if I were to say, hello, I'm Rosalinda, but hey, please call me Rose, then that's fine. You can call me Rose. So it's a decision. My decision is if I'm going to see that person again, I will correct them. I'll just say, I'm sorry, I don't care for that nickname. It's Rosalinda. And I've had some people get a little kind of huffy, like, okay. I'm sorry. That's my preference. That's my name. Sorry. Take it up with my mom. But
totally got it. And I was yes. Like, it's your name. It's like, okay. What are you going to do?
No, I don't know. But even beyond that, are the nicknames that people do, not just, you know, a different version of the name, but they go, oh, hi, I'm Cookie, or I'm, I don't know, call me Nene, or, you know, something that isn't even close to their real name. I would recommend to people in a business or any type of business or professional setting to avoid any cutesy or college or, you know, nicknames that your little brother used to call you. I just would. Maybe once you start work and you want that, that's fine. But, you know, depending on what it is, again. So it really is up to the person whether you want to correct them or not. It similarly goes with titles. You know, if you go in and you someone says, oh, I'm Dr. Richard Martinez, I would say, oh, hello, Dr. Martinez. He would say, oh, please call me Richard. I would defer to the person to tell me what they wanted me to call them. So those are just things to keep in mind.
Those are great points, Rosalinda. Excellent. Right on. Great.
Thanks.
Yeah. Absolutely. I love them. I'm enjoying this.
Oh, good. I'm so glad.
I hope so does the audience. Of course. Let's go into the cubicle style offices. How do you politely get someone to leave?
Well, you know, cubicles, it was to save space and to have that more open concept team, you know, feeling of team and one and sharing things. And, you know, some companies have taken it to the extreme where there aren't even any cubicles. There's just couches and pods and things like that for more creativity. And I think in certain industries, certainly that is a great feature, you know, to work like that in groups if that is what your job is. However, then there's the privacy issue. What if you are speaking with a client or it's your break time? And I say break time to make a personal call to a doctor appointment. And you don't necessarily need to hear or talk to your child's teacher about their F or suspension. You know, those things, cubicle isn't the best place for things like that. And then you have what the question that you brought in, you know, people, it's like an open concept. They just pop in and they see there's no door to indicate that you are not prepared to receive a visitor. They just come in. You may be on the phone. Sometimes when your back is turned, people can't tell. You may be concentrating on an email. I get startled easily, which would be very bad. I could hit send before I was ready to. If someone came in, you just never know. But once someone does settle in, and it is, and maybe it was okay for a few minutes, but now you need to get back to work or whatever, or you're done with the conversation, or they're just whining and talking about their oozing, you know, root canal or something that you don't want to hear about anymore. There are different ways. If you have a familiar, friendly relationship with that coworker, you can just say, hey, you know, I don't know, John, maybe I can catch up with you later. I got to get back to this. Thanks for stopping by. And John will probably go, okay, great, sorry, we'll catch up, and not take it personally. If you don't know the person that well, or you know from experience, doesn't make it right, but that's what you're dealing with, from experience that this person has a more sensitive nature, you may consider an alternate way versus just point blank asking them to leave. You might say, I've got to get back to this. Joan, can I call you in about an hour? I'll be free. Or would you please come back in an hour? If they don't leave, there are people who go, okay, they stand and they continue talking and they're still not leaving. You can just say, I have a deadline, I'm really sorry. Again, the one thing that you can do, which is very inconvenient, if you have one of those stubborn people that just, they don't get it because they want to tell you what they want to tell you, is stand up and say, I'm going to go to the restroom, or I'm going to run an errand, or I got to go get a cup of coffee, and walk out with them. Walk them out. And once you get them out there, you know, they'll run into someone else. They'll get a cup of coffee and you just come back. I mean, that is a tedious process. And again, it takes away from your productivity. It's inconvenient, but sometimes I pick the lesser of the two evils. If that person's going to get really offended and start crying or go tell on me or I don't know, whatever their drama is, I would rather take the tougher road or the more inconvenient road to keep the peace with that person, maintain the relationship, not hurt their feelings, and pretty much everybody's happy and I can go back to work. So that's just how I look at things. Sometimes it requires me to do a little bit of work to avoid damaging or tarnishing or whatever, hurting someone's feelings. And then, again, going into a white lie, because getting up to go get a cup of coffee, some people don't believe in doing that. It's a lie. I don't have to go to the restroom, but it's a way for me to get rid of this person, to put it bluntly. That's a personal decision. You know, in a case like that, I would go ahead and use a white lie. But that's me.
Okay, well, it all depends on the person you're trying to get rid of and the situations. And there's many different situations. So those are good points.
Yes, there are. I mean,
great.
Yes, and you know what, I wanted to add, because you said different situations, if you had an appointment, that's different. We're talking about a drop-in, you know, where I didn't even want you here and I got to get some work done. But if you had an appointment in your cubicle and the time came, say, that's why it's so good to say, oh, I can meet you from this time to this time, and have an ending time, not just for them, but for you as well. And if it goes beyond the ending time, say you allotted from 10 to 10:30, and they're still there at 10:30, and even if you can give another 15, 20 minutes, but you want to stick to your schedule, you want to get to something else, it's okay to end. Just say, oh, I just realized, wow, it's 10:30. I'm so sorry. I'm going to have to end it. I've got to get to something else. And ask to reschedule or something like that. So it's always okay to end it, especially at work. You're there to work, not to chit-chat away, really. So,
very good. For all you that work in cubicles out there, these are very good bits of information and insight being offered by Rosalinda. Very good. Let's try something else. Let's try, what are some of the common distractions during a meeting, please?
Well, you could probably list off a couple of things. All of us can, except for the people doing the distracting, of course. But, I mean, just to name a few that I know you know, I know a lot of people take their pads, iPads, and things to take notes, but some of them do that clicking, or women who have nails, and that can be distracting. It's constant clicking, clicking, clicking. If you're going to do that, I recommend to those people, sit in the back, you know, in a corner and click away. At least it's not close up to the speaker, and because that also in speaking can be, especially if it's a smaller crowd, you know, 30 people or so, that can take away from the speaker. Eventually they'll, you know, develop a tic or something. People who get up constantly to go to the refreshment table, you know, once in an appropriate time, that'd be great. But, you know, or grabbing and eating, crinkling paper, you know, making a noise with licking fingers. And, you know, I've seen all that stuff. And then the, you know, a couple other things are people who sigh or who whisper and make comments, or you hear that, and during a meeting. Those are probably the rudest things that you can do to someone. If you have something to say, you know, raise your hand or wait at the appropriate time and make a comment, or privately. People's vibrating phones, of course, that's a huge one. Even if you, you know, you have it on the table and you, it vibrates, it's still loud. You know, put phones away unless you're using them for calendar purposes or taking notes, something like that. But, you know, I don't know if I said gum chewing and clicking of pens and turning pages, and some of those are some of the things that are distracting to people. People who interrupt for no reason. There are a lot of people who want to challenge whoever's speaking or handling the meeting or whoever's speaking at the time. That's not probably good for your professional career either, to openly challenge or put someone down or embarrass them. Those are all, you know, distracting from the agenda, from the meeting itself.
Excellent point. And I believe that the people who make these sounds and noises and hmms and getting up and stuff, they're not speaking, so don't necessarily are they aware of the focus and concentration and thought process of the speaker.
Yes.
Because when you're up there speaking to people about an important item, one or two of these are fine, but they can tend to distract, especially if it's a repetitive action. And if I may, to those that go to meetings, pay attention to what you're doing. And if someone is speaking, just pay attention to what are you doing and are you distracting. And when that speaker is done, that's usually when I'm in a boardroom setting, that's usually when I'll go jump off to go get a snack or something. Otherwise, I won't move at all. So, okay, he's done. Great. I can go grab some coffee and a donut or whatever.
Also, you may miss out on something that is being said, whether it's just your staff, your regular weekly staff meeting, or, as you said, a presenter that your company brought in. Either way, or you're distracting from the person who wanted to catch that, you know, whatever brilliant thing their boss said or the announcement or whatever it is. So you also miss out. And also it can be construed by your colleagues, your manager, that or the guest that's there or client perhaps, that you are dismissive or you're bored. It also sends signals of, well, this is part not important to me, so I'm going to go do this or go to the restroom. So that tells a little bit about you. If you're not interested, I'm not going to get your attention. Okay, that's good. That's good information to know about an employee. So that also you have to be careful when, like you said, you know, you're sending a message by a lot of these things that you're doing.
Very good advice. Excellent line of thinking. Let's try another one.
Okay.
We're on a roll.
Yes.
Back to the cubicles. What if, you know, and I see this, I've seen this happen before, and I'd like to know your response. Is it okay to sit and wait for someone if they're not in their cubicle? You'll see that somebody, that's not the person, and then they'll just sit there and wait for the guy to come back. What's your take on that, please?
Well, I would say, again, it depends on who the person is. are they just a few minutes late? They were expecting you. I'm going by, you know, you had a scheduled meeting, you know, as you stated, and they're late. Well, how many minutes do you wait, and do you wait in their office? If there is a chair right outside their cubicle, or someone, another coworker that you can catch up on, and you can still see the other person's cubicle, that would be an option. But if not, there isn't, you know, the situation that I mentioned, then sitting in that person's cubicle and waiting would be fine. Now with the, you know, texting, I'm sure you could text them and say, you know, are you almost here? Or the person might text you and say, I'll be there in 5 minutes, just wait for me. Then that's fine. But while you're waiting, do not take the liberty of snooping around, even looking at their, you know, computer screen. And the one thing I recommend to people who are in an open, well, anytime, but definitely in an open concept type office is minimize your screen. It's just the best thing that you can do. And if you're working on anything that's somewhat sensitive, confidential, turn it over. It's just, why tempt anybody to hover over and read things that they shouldn't be doing? They shouldn't be doing that. It's wrong. However, you know, we are curious human beings. Seeing something is always intriguing to us. But I would sit and wait. If there's no other place to go, you wait. If there's no way of communicating, or you knew they were coming from another meeting, you might wait five. Some people believe if it's in-house, you know, 5-6 minutes, you're down the hall, leave a note or send a text saying, when you get back, let me know. And you come back. But if this, you drove to a company, and obviously they probably wouldn't send you to the person's office necessarily. They'd have you sit out in the waiting area for that person. But if they do, you know, it depends. How long do you want to wait? If it's an interview or a client you're trying to get, you're going to wait till, you know, whenever the cows come home, because that's what you want. But what is the typical waiting time for people? Some people will wait as long as 30 minutes. Other people say, you know, 15 to 20. And then I'm out of there. So it really depends on the person and whether you had an appointment scheduled right after. Say I had a 3 o'clock appointment. We start at 3:25. I have to be somewhere at 4:15. I can't extend it anymore. So you just cut into our time. But things can't be helped sometimes. So all you can do is apologize if you're late, since we're talking about being late. Just a simple apology. Would you? And if I were like half an hour late, I would offer to that person, would you like to, I'm really sorry, at your convenience, would you like to reschedule? And give them the option and see what happens.
Good points, Rosalinda. I like it. You're right on. Yeah. Very good. Thank you.
You're welcome. Please feel free to add anything.
Okay, well, I'm going to switch the question set here. And I'd like to talk about willpower and inspiration. And I'd like to get some insights into your successful world. What makes you keep on no matter what, regardless of life failures, big or small? So please let us in on what drives you, please.
Oh, my. That is a very deep question. I like it. What drives me? Okay, and I'm just going to do this off the top of my head. Gosh, I go to my parents a lot, meaning not physically, but just to the example and the way they lived their life and what they did and how they lived it and how they conducted themselves and how you just don't give up and that you have to work hard. And also my father, more than my mother, taught me too that there's going to be obstacles and there's going to be people who will make it more difficult for you, will close the door in your face, will even try to sabotage, say no, whatever, not give you the opportunities. But that's life. Okay, so what? You just move on and find a different door if that one got slammed in your face. And you go to door 15 and maybe door 17 will open. So there was always spoken and unspoken examples of that growing up. So I think that's what drives me. The second thing is, that's number one, and in that order, is I live what I preach, I guess. I walk the talk or whatever that saying is. There's no other way for me to be. Now, have I lost it a little here and there? Do I, on the road, I think one of the habits, the very uncivil habit that I have is I tend to tailgate a little bit, which is very unsafe. Don't do that at everyone, when someone's driving, you know, 63 in the fast lane. So that's one of the things that I must work on. We're all work in progress, right? But in general, I live what I tell people is I guess, a good way, using those traits that you mentioned that I wrote in my book, the courtesy, consideration. And I think I fall on the trait of being tactful, because to me, being tactful, we all know, diplomatic, you know, there's a way to say something that won't be offensive or that sort of thing. But I also think being tactful is knowing when to zip it. I don't always have to say what I'm thinking or make a point or anything. So I don't know, that's sort of a beyond what you asked me, but I believe in what I do and I love what I do. So those are probably the three things that just keep me going. Because occasionally I feel like, oh, this is, I don't know, owning your own business is very tough and it has ups and downs. So naturally, once in a while, I feel like saying, maybe I'll just go work as a crossing guard and you know, cross the little children in the morning and the afternoon and laugh with them. And wouldn't that sounds wonderful. And you know, but I like what I do, and I'm doing it for my family, I guess my parents. It's sort of a legacy of spreading what I found to be a good way of living my life and an honor of them. I want to continue doing this. So it's deeper than just a job for me.
That's very cool, very refreshing. I love it. Thank you.
You're welcome. I thank you for asking that. I've never really verbalized it, so that was the first. Thank you.
Well, good. All right. Excellent. we're close to wrapping up. We still have a few minutes. Is there anything else that you'd like our audience to know about, anything important you'd like to say? Please let us know.
Well, I don't know how important it is to anybody else, but if I had to sum up in just a couple of sentences, is I believe in that, and that's where the title of the book came in, you know, the don't burp in the boardroom. I believe we need to master the little things, meaning saying the please, the thank you, looking behind you when you open the door instead of letting it slam on the person behind you, just those little things. Because if we don't master those, I don't know how we're going to be able to handle well the bigger dilemmas, the really big stuff, like, you know, even the bullying or having someone, you know, take our parking spot and things like that, that would make just the normal person angry. And also overlooking things. I'm a big fan of that. Just, I don't have to, you know, as I said, with tact, I don't have to address every person who, you know, on Facebook and social media, oh my goodness, I've been told certain things like, oh, I'd hate to dent on it. I bet your family hated eating with you because you probably, you know, whatever, you're down their throat on which fork to use. I'd hate to eat with you. You know, things like that. What am I going to address them and take the time to explain? No, sometimes we've even eaten with paper plates and one fork in my house. You know, I'm not going to sit there and defend myself. I just figure I have to overlook it. Apparently that person has concluded that about me and that's what they want. And I just said, you know, I just answer politely because anything else is just going to keep it going. And I don't want to. I don't want that in my life. So I choose to overlook things. So I think those are the things that I think are the most important.
Well, all right. Thank you. Very good insight into your life and what keeps you going. Thank you for sharing that with us.
Wow, thank you.
And, sure. I wanted to sneak one more question in. We have a little time. I didn't want to let this one question go by, if possible. Could you please share with us some of your networking tips?
Oh, well, that one is easy. You know, be prepared, but prepared to meet people, not go and hand your card out and leave, because I've had people do that, not even ask me my name, just, hi, oh, here, have you seen this? Here's my card, and they walk away. That card never even makes it to my car. So that's one of the worst things that I think people can do, because I just feel you don't care who you're selling to, who I am, whether I want it. Maybe I can even help you and guide you to someone. So that's one of the things. I think you enter with a smile. You know, if you're in a bad mood, don't go networking. Just don't go. Smile, master the handshake. That's always good. Practice good hygiene. You would be surprised. Someone came right after the gym, and actually it wasn't networking. We had a meeting and from the gym, and he sat next to me. It was in this little corner cafe, of course, as close and intimate as you can be. We got that table. And as his sweat dried up, oh, my goodness, it was almost impossible to be next to him. But, you know, just look presentable, put a little effort, because if you don't, I'm going to wonder how much effort are you going to put into the business that I'm going to give you, my whatever you're doing for me. So have other than your business to talk about, you know, the Super Bowl's coming up, or even if you don't care about the Super Bowl, like me, I don't really care, but there's stuff that I can draw from it to talk to people. I live in the Super Bowl City neighborhood. How can I not talk about it? So have a couple things outside work. Never, ever, ever disparage or make negative comments about your competitors. Ever, ever, ever. And if someone asks you, because I have, you know, other people who do what I do, and they ask me, and I just go, yes, I'm familiar with them, because I am, you know, speak to some of them. And all I say is, oh, we have very different styles, and we do. And my style may not suit someone. I don't add that part. But so those are a few of the things. And for me, I don't like to eat at networking events. Certainly, please do. I'm not telling people not to, but take small bite-sized pieces and use a napkin. That's probably a good one. And use your left hand to pick up, unless you have a religious restriction, use your left hand when you pick up food to eat, because then you're leaving your right hand not so sticky and greasy when you have to shake hands. Those are my top tips.
Those are very good. Thank you so much for sharing that, Rosalinda. And I hope you don't mind, but we're getting close to the end of the segment, and
yes.
I have so many more questions for you. Maybe at some point you'd be able to come back on our show, because there's a lot more that I'd love to find out about.
Oh, thank you so much. It would be a pleasure, and it's been a pleasure to be on your show.
Thank you. All right. Well, thank you very much, Rosalinda. It has been wonderful and a pleasure and an honor to have you, and I thank you.
Thank you. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you. Hey, once again, her website is rosalindarandall.com. And thank you again, and stay tuned to our next show on Revenue Chat. We're going to have best-selling author and motivational speaker Ron Spell, who says, sometimes in life we find a calling we are compelled to answer. He began his highly successful writing career late in life through gentle persuasion by his wife, and then it began, his writing career. He wrote 6 novels, from coming-of-age comedy to supernatural thrillers. His latest work, Extreme Options, is a fast-paced detective murder mystery. Ron's living the dream, and now he lectures to motivate and assist others to follow their dreams, and he gives us motivational tips on the next episode of Revenue Chat. This is Tony D'Urso, brought to you by Easy Sales Procedures. Get the book, Easy Sales Procedures, for you and all of your business contacts at TonyDURSO.com. All right, thanks again, and until next time, remember, you can make life better for yourself and everyone. Choose wisely.